He let her twine her fingers in his thick, curly hair. I really ought to get to the lab. Pancho and Jake will be there at 9, and it's not even 8 yet. Cardenas wound her arms around his neck and pulled him toward her. Gaeta slid back into bed. I guess you can be pretty persuasive when you want to be.
Uh-huh.
Just don't try this kind of persuasion on Raul.
Would that upset you?
He grinned fiercely down at her. Holly would slit your throat.
Oh.
Now what's this crap about the honeymoon being over?
Delicacy and tact, Eberle said to himself as he walked out toward the lake. Use pressure only when you have to. Morning was his favorite time of day. Sunshine streamed through the solar windows. The habitat looked fresh and clean. Hardly anyone else was up and around. The other residents were either at their breakfasts or already at their jobs, leaving the lakeside paths almost exclusively to Eberle and his morning constitutional. Off to his right, he saw the little copse of trees where he had that silly tryst with Jean-Marie Urbain. A romantic spot, he thought, even in broad daylight. I wonder how she felt about our clumsy little rendezvous. Was she nervous, frightened, excited? Eberle himself had felt none of those emotions. Women were not important to him. Sex was not important. Sometimes he wondered if the prison doctors had done something to his sex drive back in Austria. He shook his head. Power is what's important, he told himself. Power keeps you safe. Power is what makes people admire you. Yet, as he strolled down to the lakeside, he felt that Madame Urbain must have at least respected him. She had said she admired him. She really was lonely. I could have had her, Eberle told himself. She was ready for an affair with me. Still, he was glad that it hadn't happened. Too many complications, too many dangers. No emotional commitments, he told himself. A man in my position has to be above all that. Power is more important than sex, he repeated to himself. I don't need a woman hanging on to me, not when I have the admiration of everyone in the habitat. They all love me. They respect and appreciate me, even the dolts who voted against me in the last election. But this time around, it'll be different. This time, I might even win unanimously. Once I've sprung my little trap on the snippy Miss Lane, she won't have a leg left to stand on. Eberle was grinning happily as he sat on the bench where he was to meet Jean-Marie Urbain. She wasn't there yet, of course. He had decided to come a good quarter hour earlier than the time they had agreed upon for this meeting. Madame Urbain had been surprised that Eberle had called her well past midnight, but she'd been alone in her apartment, as Eberle had guessed she would be. Her husband was spending long nights with the other scientists. Everyone in the habitat knew that Urbain even slept in his office most nights. And there she was, walking slowly, almost uncertainly, along the path from the village. She looked fresh and lovely in a sleeveless little flowered frock. She truly is an attractive woman, Eberle realized. I could have her if I wanted to. He got up from the bench and, once she was close enough, made a slight bow. Madame Urbain, how pleasant to see you again, he said, smiling his best smile. She seemed nervous.
You said it was important that we talk together.
Yes, it is, gesturing to the bench. Please sit down. She looked around as if afraid she'd been followed. There's nothing wrong with the wife of the habitat's chief scientist sitting on a park bench with the chief administrator in broad daylight, Eberle said, gesturing to the bench again. Please make yourself comfortable. She perched like a frightened little bird, ready to flutter away at the slightest provocation. Sitting almost an arm's length from her, Eberle said, What I wanted to talk to you about is politics. Jean-Marie visibly relaxed. And science, Eberle added.
Yes?
Let me get straight to the point, he said. This petition to overthrow our zero-growth protocol is a direct danger to your husband's work.
A danger?
Her eyes widened.
How so?
Eberly spent the next half hour explaining how unlimited population growth would eat up the habitat's resources, forcing the government to devote more and constantly more of its precious allocations of food, funds, and personnel to provide for a relentlessly growing population. "We won't be able to support the scientific staff," he told her. "We might even have to put them to work in the hospital or the food processing plants."
"But the ICU would provide funding for the research,"
Jean-Marie objected. "Only up to a point," said Eberly. "The ICU only provides a small share of the scientific staff's needs. The citizens of this habitat are expected to shoulder most of the burden." It was almost true. An exaggeration, but not much of one. Jean-Marie sat on the bench, head bowed, pondering what Eberly was telling her. At last she said slowly,
"You are saying that if the petition succeeds in overthrowing the ZPG protocol, it will endanger the work my husband and the other scientists are engaged in?"
"Most definitely. It could put an end to all the scientific research being conducted here."
"But what can we do about it?"
Eberly smiled inwardly at her use of "we." "I've got her," he told himself. "She'll do what I tell her to." "Someone must take a stand against this petition," he told her, radiating sincerity. "Someone must show the women of this habitat that the petition could put an end to our very reason for existence." Jean-Marie nodded, but she still looked slightly uncertain. Eberly grasped her hands and looked straight into her light brown eyes.
"Jean-Marie, may I call you Jean-Marie?" "Yes," she murmured. "Of course."
"Jean-Marie, we face a choice. This habitat can be the center for the most important scientific research being conducted in the entire solar system." He hesitated dramatically. "Or it can sink into a starving, stinking, overpopulated cesspool like so many poor nations on Earth."
"I see. I understand."
"You can be a central figure in saving us from collapse. The choice is yours." Jean-Marie Urbain got to her feet, every line of her petite figure showing determination.
"Tell me what I must do," she said to Eberly.
He rose beside her. "Yes," he said, "I will." They each felt relieved that the other didn't mention their brief tryst of 2 months before.
21 March 2096, mid-morning.
"There it is again,"
Vernon Donkman said to himself. Alone in his cubbyhole office, he glared at the old-fashioned desktop computer screen. As usual, he wore a funereal dark tunic and slacks, even though his complexion was now a warm golden tan, thanks to the enzyme treatments he'd taken. But his appearance didn't matter to him at this particular moment. His slightly bulging eyes glowered at the unbalanced figures on the display screen. For the fourth straight month, the Habitat Central account would not balance. The discrepancy was still minuscule, only a few hundred new international dollars, but it irritated Donkman more than if it had been a billion.
"It's too small for someone to be embezzling the money," he thought. "Besides, there have been no unauthorized accesses of the accounts."
He had spent so many long, sleepless nights tracing the accounts that his wife accused him of having an affair.
"No," he had assured her. "Her rival was the blasted accounting system that refused to balance as it should."
For a while, Donkman thought the problem might be in the computer. He had gone to Eberly and requisitioned the best computer analysts in the habitat. Most of them were on Urbane's scientific staff and not available to him. Those who did examine the accounting program found nothing wrong with the program or the hardware. Donkman had shifted to other computers and had his beloved little desktop completely overhauled. No use. The accounts still failed to balance.
Maddening!
At the end of every month, the master account showed this slight, picayune imbalance. Never the same amount, never more than a few hundred dollars. Every month Donkman tried to track down the source of the anomaly and, failing to find it, was forced to the humiliation of correcting the master account by hand. Sometimes he had to add money to fix the discrepancy, sometimes he had to subtract. He tried checking out the sums he had put in or out each month, but they didn't match or add up in any way Donkman could see. For a while he thought that the random power outages the habitat suffered might be the cause of the computer's misbehavior. but the computer system was backed up by triply redundant auxiliary batteries and fuel cells. They never flickered, not even when the power went out for an hour or more. The only consistency he could find in the entire matter was that the discrepancy seemed to show up every 2 weeks on